Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Medic Diaries. My name is Dr. Yvonne Maldo, and I'm so glad you're able to join me for this episode. In case you haven't heard of Medic Diaries, it's basically a podcast which talks about the day-to-day medical issues that we face in our lives, and we have like a nice, cool, simple and understandable perspective to it. So, my last episode was about depression, and we basically talked about the symptoms and how it presents, like the types and all that. So if you haven't listened to the last episode, please pause right now and go listen to it so that you know and can catch up with what we're talking about now. So you think you have depression, or you do have depression? Well, welcome to the club. There actually are a lot of people, both famous and non-famous, who have dealt with depression or are dealing with depression some sort of way. I want to give examples of it and just flow with me here because I'm getting to something here. Have you guys heard of The Rock? You know, Dwayne Johnson, the wrestler turned actor turned whole entertainer, the whole shebang. Wow. Dwayne Johnson actually has been dealing with depression for quite a number of years, and it took him some time before he could finally open up to the whole possibility of treatment and open up about how to share it and stuff. Another person which we are quite familiar with is Katy Perry. I'm sure you've sung some of her songs, you've listened to some of her songs, you may like or not like it, her songs that is, but Katy Perry is someone we actually are very familiar with and also happens to be dealing with depression. Another one which kind of shocked me a bit was Michael Phelps. You guys know Michael Phelps, right? AKA like the fish, basically. The 28 Olympic medalist for swimming stated at some point that he spent about 3 to 5 days in his house, and I quote, not wanting to live life, and that's basically when he knew that he needed help. Aww. A lot of us have such epiphanies at some point in our lives, and it just depends basically on how severe it is. For him, he clearly has had some issues with depression, and he finally shared about it. Okay, I'm sure when you were a kid, or well, I'm assuming my audience are well-rounded. I don't know if you guys have watched the movie The Mask before. You know that character who's all green but likes to wear yellow suits and can transform to literally anything?
Boom! Somebody stop me!
You guessed it right, Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey actually also suffers from depression, and he actually has a very strict approach to how he handles himself, which we'll talk about later in the pod. And then another person who really opened my eyes to postpartum depression and me really knowing about it was Gwyneth Paltrow. She talked about it, the postpartum depression that is, about, I think, about 5 months post her delivery of her baby. And I think I was in med school, but I definitely not done psychiatry by then. So she was someone who opened my eyes to a lot of these stories and a lot of exposure to mental health, especially for mothers, which seems to be actually very common now, because a lot of people were able to relate with her and state, you know what, I went through this as well and I thought I was going mad. Yeah. Okay, I'm sure you all are aware of JK Rowling as well, Harry Potter fans. If you are not aware of JK Rowling, okay, we're not judging, but she, I can attest to, has gone through quite a number of events in her life, and one of the events in her life she had mentioned is depression and how she's been handling it over the years and how it's actually helped her to grow. My favorite out of this list actually is Abraham Lincoln. If you are not aware of this man, which would be strange, he's the 16th president of America, And there was a time he was really going through it. And when I say going through it, I mean in terms of depression. Till he stated, oh, guys, let me just give a disclaimer. My neighbors are doing construction. So if you hear some noises in the background, I'm so sorry. I'll try as much as possible to edit them out. But if you do, I apologize. Anyway, so Abe Lincoln at some point stated, quote, if what I felt were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would be not one cheerful face on earth. Like, that's really, really heavy. That the amount of depression and the turmoil that he was going through was so much that literally everyone would be upset as well. So that got me thinking, if Abe Lincoln could overcome depression, then who are we not to also overcome it, you know? Granted, we're all different and all, but I'm just trying to give examples of people who we know. So we try and remove this stigma or this whole nonchalant attitude that we actually are not aware of depression and it being real. I have a few honorable mentions for my list, and one of them is Winston Churchill. And the shocker, Sigmund Freud, what? The psychoanalyst. I'm kind of really jazzed about that. But yeah, these are a few of the people who we are familiar with or have heard about who are dealing or who dealt with depression. All right. The reason why I wanted to mention these names is to just drive to the point that depression doesn't discriminate. It never has. And it never will. So it just goes to show you that there are a lot of people who deal with it, and it's actually very common. I want us to actually look at how it's usually treated, because I had mentioned earlier in my last podcast that depression is something which can be treated. People describe depression to me as a fog, a mental fog for that matter, which no matter what you do, majority of the time, it's very hard to shake off that fog. It clouds your mind and your ability to concentrate and just do the normal things you were able to do prior to the depressive episode. So how about we dive right into how depression is treated or is managed on a day-to-day basis? There are various ways of how to manage depression or a depressive episode. There's the medical side of it, that is like drugs or hospitalization, ECT, and then there is the psychotherapy, where, or also called talk therapy. There is also the adjuvant, the small things which people do to help better with the other things or the other measures that I've just mentioned. So in the medical aspects, things such as antidepressants, there are quite a number of them in the market which are approved by FDA, and I don't want to dive into the names and all that. No, that's not really your business. But basically, an antidepressant is usually prescribed by a psychiatrist, and they are usually given to a patient or a client dependent on the type of depression they have, one, and also the severity of the depression that they have. All right. So it has been noted that if you have a relative or like a family, like in an immediate family, for example, like your brother, your sister, your parents happen to be depressed and they were using a particular type of antidepressants, it most likely will also work for you, the immediate family member. This is something which has been noted and has been studied. But then again, not one size fits all. I feel like I'll keep saying this over and over and over again. That being said, there's something else I need to mention in regards to antidepressants. You can't get it off the counter, like I had mentioned. It has to be prescribed to you by a doctor. And then secondly, some antidepressants, once a patient is now taking it, can actually make them go worse. Like, the symptoms can actually get worse. Like, they get more depressed, they have more suicidal thoughts. If they were having or doing self-harm, then the self-harm actually gets more. When I mean self-harm, it's like the cutting of the wrist or just trying to inflict some sort of pain and such. Okay, so when such a case appears where things are getting much worse than it should while you're on antidepressants, it is like a huge deal for you to go back to your doctor and tell them, I'm not gelling well with this meds, we have to change it. Antidepressants work by changing a bit of the chemicals in your brain.
Wow.
And by doing so, is able to raise your moods a bit higher and just try and balance the chemicals in your brain so that you are able to sort of, to speak, snap out of the fog. Okay. If, and that is usually on an outpatient basis, if for some reason there is a very, very severe type of depression, then most likely someone would have to be hospitalized, or they are a hazard to themselves or to the people around them, then probably would have to be hospitalized. Again, that is all done by a doctor. Okay. Now, one of the major measures of help when it comes to depression treatment is psychotherapy, also called talk therapy. Yeah, you know, the one where they say, oh yeah, you're going to the shrink and all that. Mm-hmm. That's basically what I mean. Some of you may tell me that I have a friend, I have a best friend, in fact, who can just help me with this talk therapy. Why do I need to pay to go see some person, some stranger, and spill all my beans to them? They're going to judge me and all that. Okay. The whole point of you actually meeting someone who is a third party is, one, they are very objective. They are not your friend. Your friend will be a bit subjective one way or the other because they know you. They know you too well. Two, they are not trained in being able to actually get you out of that fog that you're in. Your friend, that is. They are not trained to prescribe medication. They are not trained to deal with some information which you wouldn't want to share. A psychiatrist or a psychologist, however, have gotten their training academically and experience in that manner. So they are able to really guide you. Granted, therapy is hard work, but the tools that you come out with to help you equip yourself and be able to help you to progress in life and all is much more important than just hanging out with bestie. You need to understand me on that. I have mentioned two keywords here, psychiatrist and psychologist. A lot of people always ask me what is the difference. A psychiatrist is a medical doctor who has then gone to go specialize in mental health. So they are allowed to do a lot of prescription of medications such as the antidepressants I talked about earlier, and they are also allowed to basically admit you and all that. Okay, so they are going to work with you, especially in terms of your medical costs and the drugs and the drug balances and changing it and all that. A psychologist, however, is also trained in mental health. However, they are not a medical doctor unless they decide to go and do further studies and all. But they are not a medical doctor, but they are specialized in just mental health. A psychologist and a psychiatrist have varying roles. They have similar roles as well, but most of the time you will, if that is, you have to meet one of them, most likely one will refer the other to and back and forth. If you went to a psychologist will take your background, help you, equip you and all that. But when they realize that you need medication, then you are referred to a psychiatrist. A psychiatrist may see and take all of your background and even be able to prescribe medication for you. However, they will still have some skills or some things they would want the patient to learn, and then thus referring you to a psychologist. So it's usually teamwork that they do, but it's not to discredit that both of the professions are not good. Okay, it is my opinion, and again I say my opinion, that every adult should have an experience with therapy. And no, I'm not trying to do the whole wave current trend of, I'm going to therapy. No, not that. I seriously actually mean, I feel like adulting can be hard, and adulting takes a bit of navigation sometimes, as life generally does. And there are a lot of people walking around with some sort of mental health issue, whether they learnt it or acquired it when they were really young, or acquired it while they were getting older, like in the elderly stage and stuff. It is just my belief that having someone who is not in your circle and is not buddy-buddy with you should be able to have a conversation with them. Let me give you an example. Yvonne Origi and Lovey Ajay from Jesus and Jollof, the podcast. Woohoo! I love them. Anyway, they had an episode which was talking about unlearning things. And to give you like a bit of a background, they are African and Nigerian for that matter. There are some things we are taught as Africans which do not really help us when we grow up. So I'm sure you may probably have that experience as well, because our parents are all human. So they're going to make some mistakes with us. It's all good. It's fine. But we have to unlearn some things either we've acquired from our parents or the environment we're in. And that is why I'm making the argument that an adult should have some sessions in their life at some point in their life. I'm just saying, especially if like you're about to get into like a relationship and whatnot, or dealing with having found success after having a long-standing history of poverty. I'm not saying Lovey Ajay was in poverty or anything, but she definitely talked about in the episode how she's struggling with her success. She doesn't know how to manage success. And it might sound crazy, but some of us are not trained for that. We have some mentality or whatever it is. So she, for example, has been dealing with that through her therapy sessions, among other things that obviously she did not share. I have digressed. I just needed to point that out. Anyway, so now that you are going for your therapy and whatnot, what do you expect? How do you prepare for it as a client? They're usually called clients now, not really patients. So as a client, you can take a family member or a friend with you if you want to. If you want to go alone, you can do so as well. I have gone alone before and I was good with that. Then afterwards, or just before you actually go for your session, you could also jot down, just list down a few of the symptoms you've been feeling. Like literally state down, okay, I felt like this at this time in the morning and it was because of this situation which happened. So basically you're mentioning the symptom and what triggered it. It helps so much more for the doctor to help you figure out why exactly those things are triggering. Do you get what I'm talking about? Yeah. So doing such a list, you can do it on your phone, you can write it down in your diary, whatever it is. By doing so, then it also helps you to communicate yourself a bit more. Okay. Now, what do you expect when you go for therapy? Please note, I'm really diving into this bit because it's a major aspect of trying to help with depression treatment. So I want to paint like a mental picture for someone who would want to go for such a session. So what should you expect? A comfortable room, a well enough lit room, lit like there's good lighting, not lit like we're on fire and all that. No. So well enough lit room and comfortable. If you feel uncomfortable, you can always tell the person there. You can call ahead to also find out if you're meeting a male or female health care worker, and probably you just make your preference. If you feel like I need to just talk to a woman, fine. If you want to talk to just a guy, fine. It is expected for you to say such things. If you don't feel like you need any preferences, well and good. So well, you are at your appointment now. I encourage people to ask questions. there are some people who are just generally skeptical, so they're going to ask a gazillion and one questions, and then there are other people who would just keep quiet and take it as it is. No, ask some questions, do some research. And so some of the questions you could ask is, okay, so the symptoms that I have, what's the possible causes of such? Are there any type of tests that I need to do for further diagnosis? Because you never know, there could be an underlying cause. Like I had mentioned in the last episode, depression can be caused by medical conditions such as diabetes, hypothyroidism. So ask these questions. Is there some sort of test that should be done for me? And then, are there any alternatives to the primary approach that the doctor is suggesting? And this is during the interaction you're having in your session. All right. But just like you have asked your questions, your doctor will direct some questions to you. And some of them could be, okay, so when did you note, or when did your loved ones around you note that the symptoms of depression are around? And how long have you had the symptoms? Is it with mood fluctuation, or are you always feeling down? These are some of the things you may expect from your doctor. It could be completely different for you, but I'm just trying to paint a mental picture for you yet again. Now that we've talked about talk therapy, and I feel like you have a bit of an idea of what's going on in that aspect, those are the modern and more current ways of dealing with depression. However, there are some old school controversial kind of methods which people are not really keen on doing anymore. An example is called ECT. ECT stands for electroconvulsive therapy. And just like the word literally stands for, it is throwing electrical currents to pass through someone's brain intentionally to trigger a brief seizure. And the hope or the aim of doing that is to change the chemical balances in your brain to then alleviate the mood. Yeah. Anyway, it's very controversial because people view it as very barbaric now. Like, how can you do that? You're literally electrocuting someone just to make them better. But the indication for this treatment is usually when all else fails, literally, like all the other methods fail. So that's basically treatment-resistant depression. They've tried the medications, they've tried the talk therapy, they've tried the other adjuvants, they've tried a lot, and it just doesn't seem to be working. So basically, that is one of the major indications for it. If you just have severe depression and they're trying to get you out of that fog to be a bit more lucid before now trying the other methods. Again, I said it can be barbaric, but funny enough, it's still being used till now. I thought it was an old school method, but I went to do some research and they stated that they're doing it in a more safer way and more humane way. So the current or the more modern version of it is someone is sedated. So they give you general anesthesia. Basically, you go to sleep. You sleep, and then they now do the shocking method on you again. Right. Now, there are a few side effects to this procedure, this ECT, with the major one being immediate confusion after the procedure. So there's confusion and memory loss, which can last from like losing your memory for weeks or even months, but never past a year. So with time, then you're able to recover your memories again, but it can be gruesome, I guess. And then finally, like the physical effects itself. Some people talk of jaw pain, headaches, nausea, and muscle aches. Those are quite mild compared to the way back when, like the old school ECT, where people literally conversed so much that they got fractures. Yeah, so that's why they're saying it's safer and it's more controlled, so they're able to really know what they're dealing with. All right. The adjuvant treatment that I wanted to talk about, there are a couple of them, but the major one I want to just mention is support system. Support system doesn't have to be like a huge group of people around you in your life. If you do have that, God bless you. God bless their souls. Like, they are doing the Lord's work. Good for them. Support system sometimes can just be one person. It doesn't have to be a huge group of people, but just someone who's able to understand what you're going through. I'll try and understand what is happening, because we're all human. Not everyone will, you know. So having a support system when someone is usually in this sort of mental state really, really does help in terms of the improvement and treatment of depression. Another thing which is actually a misconception here is alcohol use. When you're depressed, you feel like you'd want to alleviate your mood a bit, like make it a bit happier. So why not get merry? Let's go drink, indulge in the alcohol, all that shebang. What you don't know, however, is that brief moment that you have being happy and euphoric actually then causes further depression. So it has been noted by so many studies that alcohol is actually a depressant in the long run. So if you really, really, really must take, then it has to be in very low levels, or altogether you can cut it. I had mentioned earlier about Jim Carrey and how strict he is when it comes to his depression and how he manages it. So he literally cuts off alcohol from his system. He's like, I don't need to go that road. I need to be more in control of my life and all that shebang. So yeah, that is what he has decided to do. All right, now, another thing which has been really, really helpful to a lot of depressed patients and have now, and also scientifically kind of proven to help, is exercise. I had mentioned exercise before on the podcast, one of the episodes, about how having endorphins, which is the feel-good mood, having endorphins in your system basically makes you feel a bit more happy and more lighter. Exercise is a great way to induce that. So you can do those 5-minute, 7-minute HIIT exercises for cardio. You can do kickboxing, you can do just running and aerobics, whatever it is that gets you pumped, so to speak. Yeah, in terms of exercising, really, really does help raise your endorphins, and in the long run also helps whatever just raises your mood. There are alternative things people do, and I have tried a few, and then there are others which I've just not done. So some of them are acupuncture, relaxation techniques such as yoga, meditation, music and art therapy. I feel like I'm more on that early myself. And spirituality. So in regards to spirituality, I feel like it can really help someone, because everyone's spirituality and form of definition of it is very different. So I'll leave that up to you. But people really indulging and getting in touch with their spirituality really helps. I need to give like a story here. There was an article I read about a pastor Perry Noble. You should Google him. Apparently he's like a superstar pastor, huge congregation and the whole works, and he was now championing the fact that pastors can also have depression. Remember I had said earlier that depression does not discriminate. Yes. So he talked about his journey in this article and all, and how he was in so much denial about it, and as much as he was the spiritual father and he was very much in touch with God, he felt like the depression was a way of God teaching him how to be a better man and all that. So I just found it really interesting that even spiritual leaders can go through depression. Wow. I mean, we're all human, so it kind of makes sense. He even wrote a book about it. So if you're the type who like to dive into reading and all, the book is called Overwhelm by Pastor Perry Noble. So just check it out. Yes. So the last thing in terms of the alternatives adjuvants would be food. The junk you put in your body also affects the way your mood is. If you have more supplements, especially like omega-3 supplements or foods which have omega-3, they really help to boost your mood. And basically, you're being holistic here. The whole point of treatment of depression is trying to be holistic. So you're doing the medical aspect and you're doing your self and interpersonal treatment as well. I would like to state that usually, majority of the time, you can't treat depression by yourself. So I would really, really advise people not to just do this or handle this by themselves. I hope this episode has helped you. I hope you feel a bit more enlightened about this topic. I hope it's helped with a bit of the stigma. If you know someone who's been going through it or you are going through it, just try and have a bit more empathy now. I'm so glad you listened to this episode. I'm so glad you guys are still working with me and walking with me. Like, I actually have an audience now. It's really, really cool. Anyway, let's get right into the fun medical fact for the day. Did you know that scientists say the higher your IQ, the more you dream? Wow. While this may be true, don't take it as a sign that you're mentally lacking. If you can't recall all your dreams, I know a lot of us go through that. Like, yeah, I dreamt this, but I just can't remember. Most of us actually don't remember many of our dreams. And the average length of most of our dreams is only 2 to 3 seconds. So it's barely long enough for us to even register. So don't feel bad if you can't remember your dreams. But just remember, your IQ basically states that you will have a lot more dreams than the average person. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I adore you all for listening to me and just chatting with me on my social media platform. I'm really, really curious and I just want to hear more from you guys. I will talk to you soon in the next episode. Bye.